Baltimore has many nicknames. The Monumental City, Charm City, the city that reads. But one of its oldest nicknames is Mobtown. It's a name the city has earned through a long history of political violence, riots, and street fighting. And at no time was that reputation more deserved than in the years just before the Civil War. For much of the 1850s, election days in Baltimore meant armed gangs, volunteer firefighters, police officers, and political operatives battling each other in the streets. Political parties fought for power and patronage, not just with speeches and campaigns, but with pistols, clubs, and intimidation. At the center of these battles were the Know-Nothings. Officially known as the American Party, this nativist, anti-Catholic, and anti-immigrant political movement dominated Baltimore politics for much of the second half of the 1850s and helped cement Baltimore's reputation as Mobtown. So how did one of the U.S.'s fastest-growing cities become synonymous with political violence? Who were the Know-Nothings? And what can this turbulent chapter of history tell us about democracy, race, immigration, religion, and power in 19th century Maryland? Welcome to Maryland Unfolded, a history podcast from Baltimore Public Media and WYPR, made possible in part by Gallagher LLP. I'm Mark Gunnery, a public historian and the senior producer of Maryland Unfolded. Today's episode of Maryland Unfolded is hosted by Mark Steiner. Mark Steiner is the Peabody Award-winning host of The Mark Steiner Show, formerly at WYPR and WEAA, and now at The Real News Network. All right, here's the show.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome to Maryland Unfolded here on Baltimore Public Media. On today's show, we look back at a moment in history that feels deeply resonant with what we face today. In the mid-19th century, a political party was formed to oppose immigration. The American Party, better known as the Know-Nothing Party, existed for only about 16 years, but its impact was intense. They were a nativist movement who opposed immigration of Catholics from Germany, Ireland, and France, and on the West Coast, they fought against Chinese immigration. They were especially powerful here in Baltimore, which had many German and Irish immigrants by the mid-19th century. Baltimore had two Know-Nothing mayors, and the city was rocked by political violence during several elections, including the 1856 Baltimore Know-Nothing riots. So joining us today to talk about all this and that era is Dr. Matthew Crenson. Matthew Crenson is the Academy Professor and Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Johns Hopkins University. He's the author of several books about politics, including Presidential Power Unchecked and Unbalanced, Downsizing Democracy, How America Sidelined Citizens and Privatized Its Public, and his most recent book, Baltimore, A Political History. Let's talk a bit about the Know-Nothing movement, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
The name itself sounds derogatory, the Know-Nothings. So let's talk a bit about that and the role they played politically in the state and actually how it emanated to the country, but in the state.
Yeah. Actually, the name, the Know-Nothings, came from the fact that it was a secret organization. So when it,
somebody, we know nothing.
We know nothing. But they knew a thing or two. What they knew is how to win elections. But they had a larger and largely subterranean purpose. They emerged in the 1850s at a time when the country was beginning to divide over the issue of slavery. Baltimore and Maryland were border city, border state. Baltimore was internally divided between Quaker merchants who were abolitionists, other merchants with southern roots who were pro-slavery, and some were slave dealers. So there's one issue that nobody really wanted to talk about here because it would be very, very disruptive. So what the Know-Nothings did was to provide an off-ramp from the issue of slavery to preserve unity in Baltimore especially. And they were quite explicit about this. In fact, one of them, a Know-Nothing congressman from Baltimore, once said, Henry Winter Davis, once said, the way to deal with the slavery issue is to keep silent about it. Another Baltimore congressman, also a Know-Nothing, gave a speech on the floor of the House that said, the Know-Nothing Party is the wave of the future because you other guys, you're sectional party, you're a party of the South, a party of the North. We're the party of the entire nation. And we've essentially sidelined the slavery issue and brought a base for national unity. So they were quite conscious of what they were doing. And the fact is that although ostensibly they were anti-Catholic and anti-immigrant, once they took over the government in 1854, they didn't do anything to implement those goals. Nothing. They did try to prevent naturalized citizens from voting, but they were trying to prevent Democrats in general from voting.
Well, different than the Democrats we have today.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Very different.
They were pro-slavery, right, but they were also determined to try to overthrow the Know-Nothings, who seized power largely through violence. They were backed by volunteer fire companies, were really gangs. Behind the volunteer fire companies were other gangs, street gangs, the Plug Uglies, the Calathumpians, the Blood Tubs, the Rip Raps.
Great names.
Who were mobilized to fight Democrats, whose power center was an Irish ward, the 8th Ward. And in fact, in 1856, during the mayoral and congressional elections, there was about 20 fatalities during elections, and over 200 people were injured, some of them very seriously. And in fact, there was street fighting right in the vicinity of Mount Vernon Place. Gunmen were crouching behind those famous white marble steps and taking shots at one another in the shadow of the Washington Monument. So it was a bloody takeover, and it worked. The Know-Nothings got control of government. It also got control of the state, actually, for many of the same reasons, because not by violence necessarily, but because generally as a border state, people were trying to avoid the issue of slavery. It was too divisive.
So they didn't debate it. They didn't talk.
They didn't talk. That's one of the persistent things through the history of Baltimore. That race is something that Baltimoreans in general didn't like to talk about, at least white Baltimoreans. This was a complete takeover of local government, so much so that the Democrats stopped running candidates. It was too dangerous. No candidate for mayor. Only one candidate for city council from the Irish 8th Ward.
Who won?
Oh, no. No contest. In fact, that battle around, that was between the 7th Ward and the 8th Ward.
Interesting. So what led to the demise of the Know-Nothings?
The state legislature again. They were Democrats. They saw the Know-Nothings were running things in Baltimore and electing members to the state legislature. They obviously didn't like that. So they collected a lot of people went to Annapolis to testify about the terrible Know-Nothing tactics to control the government, how they're killing people and stuff like that, including innocent civilians who just happened to be passing by and got hit by bullets. And so the state legislature waited until the session was over. They wanted to do this during the session. They wanted to kick out the Know-Nothing candidates. They didn't want to do it at the middle of the session because then there would be a special election in Baltimore which Know-Nothing would still control. So they waited until the end of the session when they kicked out the Know-Nothings and then passed legislation that took over the running of the police department from the city. When it became a state agency. The police commissioners were state appointees. Then it put the police commissioners in charge of the administration of elections. So they were the people who selected the election judges. And that's what finally got rid of the Know-Nothings. That's when they lost control of the city.
So much for democracy.
So much.
Lord. Was the anti-Catholicism in this state founded by Catholics?
Sure, yeah.
As vociferous and deep in other places?
It was muted in Baltimore because the state was founded as Catholic. So a lot of Catholics who lived in Baltimore, many of them immigrants, Irish and German. But in fact, one Know-Nothing delegate to the National Convention, I forget exactly what year this was, introduced a resolution there which would have allowed Catholics born in the United States to become members of the secret Know-Nothing Party.
Oh, interesting.
So they were more accommodating toward Catholics than the party nationally. And in fact, that resolution was voted down by the National Party. But in fact, in Baltimore, the Know-Nothing Party persisted even after 1856 when nationally the party collapsed over the issue of slavery. They finally fell apart. But Baltimore held together until right up to the time when the state legislature finally captured the city. And then in 1860, the Baltimore was subject to a military government. And surprisingly, the mayor and the members of the city council were all Republicans.
Right. Yeah, because Baltimore was it was an occupied state.
It was.
During the Civil
War. It
was,
yes. Mm-hmm. The police force continued to be controlled by the state up until just a few years ago.
Right.
So it lasted for 160 years.
I remember the battle to take the police force back under Baltimore control.
It took a while.
And that was a battle.
It was.
In the state legislature.
Yep.
There's something about Maryland. People really, for lots of different levels, historically, in ways you might agree with, and in certain ways you might disagree with, and what's happening now, there's always been this tension between Baltimore and the rest of the state.
It has been, and continues to be. And also, I mean, other continuities that I found, the business about not wanting to talk about race or slavery.
Right.
That's another continuity in Baltimore history.
Right.
So.
Going back to the Know-Nothings for a minute, mm-hmm. the roots of the Know-Nothings, there's this kind of religious intolerance, anti-immigrant feeling, and this is instead of a political anxiety. I mean, it really was rooted in not wanting the other to have power.
Yeah, it was rooted in greed. I mean, they couldn't talk about the slavery issue. They didn't want to talk about that. They didn't really were interested in talking about Catholicism or immigrants. That wasn't important to them. So they had no issues. So when they took control of the government, the thing that they were mostly interested in was jobs and money. They became, in a sense, Baltimore's first true political machine. And they extended the machine from government to private enterprise. Well, it wasn't private enterprise. It was really public enterprise. In the late 1850s, the mayor of Baltimore, Thomas Swan, negotiated an agreement with a trolley car company, horse-drawn trolleys. That trolley car company became a source of patronage for hundreds of Know-Nothing loyalists. And one of the agreements he made with the trolley company was they would pay him a certain amount of money, pay the city a certain amount of money for every fare they collected. And that money was used to purchase what we now know as Druid Hill Park with a lake named after the Mayor Swan, Swan Lake.
Swan Lake. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I always wondered why it was called Swan Lake. That's why it's called Swan Lake.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well. This I think it's really important because I think that one of the things that I kept thinking about, it, as I said a moment ago, as you talk about it, is just how this still affects the city in many ways mm-hmm. today. It made me think also about, you mentioned this a little bit earlier, it was the role street gangs played.
Oh, yeah.
And who they were.
Yeah.
Because the names you threw out were really very funny sounding names,
yeah, right.
But it wasn't funny.
No, it wasn't. This is part of the city's history as mob town. I think, you know, this is something that originates early and persists. Partly because Baltimore had so little apparatus of government.
What do you mean?
The mechanisms for preserving public order. Uh-huh. Simple things like the police force. I mean, one of the ironic things about the Know-Nothings was that after this deadly election in 1856, Mayor Swan used his influence at the city council, and he had formerly been the president of the B&O Railroad. So he was a big cheese. He got rid of volunteer fire companies, which had been the muscle for the Know-Nothing Party. He created a full-time fire department. Huh. He reorganized the night watch. It became a real police force with a hierarchy, with a definite structure. Every day, the sergeants would march the police officers out to their beats around the city. So he reacted to the violence by creating these governing institutions. But incidentally, what those institutions provided was more jobs for his supporters. And that was what they were after.
Interesting. This is fascinating. I really appreciate this. We've only touched the surface of what you've written about. Mm-hmm. It'd be great to have more conversations about this. Matthew Crenson is one of Baltimore's great historians and teachers. Book, Baltimore Political History. I mean, it's a lot of pages, about 400 or 500, but it's amazing. And it gives a history you don't find anywhere else. Because I think that the complexity we face today is in many ways comes out of
it does.
The history of how the city grew and what it became.
Yeah. And today, you know, the race issue is still sort of submerged because—
What do you mean submerged?
The white people who would discuss it, they're gone. They live in the suburbs. They don't go to public schools. They send the kids to private schools. So that discussion that has been delayed for so long still hasn't really.
That's interesting. No, it is. I mean, I think that this is a different conversation I have now, right. But it's why the. Yeah. I mean, the suburbs developed because people.
Yeah.
White people fled the city.
And assisted by Mayor Swan's trolley car lines.
Right. I hope to get that done.
Yeah.
So one last question. So Swan Lake, is that where Tchaikovsky got the name?
I don't know. Did he ever come to Baltimore? I'm not sure.
I've been speaking with Matthew Crenson. Matthew Crenson is the Academy Professor and Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Johns Hopkins University. And if you want to learn more about some of the history we've been talking about, check out his book, Baltimore, A Political History, which is available from Johns Hopkins University Press. And thank you all for listening to Maryland Unfolded. For Maryland Unfolded and Baltimore Public Media, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.
Maryland Unfolded is a production of Baltimore Public Media and WYPR, made possible in part by Gallagher LLP. Listen to us online at wypr.org or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear your feedback. Email us at marylandunfolded@bemorepublicmedia.org. For Baltimore Public Media and WYPR, I'm senior producer Mark Gunnery. Take care.